Let's start out tonight with Mike Hammond of Gun Owners of America. Mike, welcome back to the broadcast. Thank you for joining us, Mike.
Hello, America, and let's go, Brannon.
Glad to have you with us here on this January winter night. All right, we'd like to have you on to give us updates from time to time about the assault on our Second Amendment and also any victories. Let's start with good news. Any good news to report tonight, Mike?
Well, there's pretty good news. We're in the middle of a battle which we haven't lost yet. I don't agree with Joe Biden on many things, but I don't even agree with him on what city he's in, because normally he doesn't know. But I do agree with him on one thing. We are right in the middle of a battle to determine whether our republic, as a country of free people, is going to survive or not. And as of tonight, it looks pretty good. It looks like freedom is winning and Biden is losing. Let me say that I have probably traveled through a larger number of countries than most people with the intention of trying to overthrow their governments. And the first thing you know when you have a dictatorial country is that they try to imprison their opposition so that they don't pose a threat.
Yes.
And you've seen over the last year the big thrust of the Biden administration, the people in Congress, have been to try to imprison people who oppose them on the basis of the January 6th incident. Incidentally, they spent all summer, had no problem when their own people burned down over 100 American cities, but when Nancy Pelosi is forced to hide under the table, then they take umbrage. And let me tell you, the one thing currently standing in the way of a banana republic for our country, the one thing is the Senate filibuster. And as of tonight, the Senate filibuster looks like it's going to pull through.
All right, so for those who don't understand, you were up on Capitol Hill. You were working inside the Reagan White House. You were inside meetings in the Reagan White House, helping to draft key legislation. You're a veteran of Washington, D.C. politics and the Hill and legislation, and you wrote a lot of legislation working up on the Hill.
Yeah.
So help us as laypeople understand this whole battle with the filibuster. What does it mean? And Manchin, who's a Democrat, is standing on the good side, isn't he?
Yes. I think God, thankfully, is standing on the good side as well, because we have more good news tonight in that one of the Democratic senators has come down with COVID and won't be able to cast the 50th vote, even if they're able to bully the two swing votes into voting with them in order to eliminate the filibuster. Let me explain what that is.
Yes.
Basically, in the Senate of the United States, a senator normally has the right to stand up and talk forever.
That would be like Mr. Smith goes to Washington, Jimmy Stewart talking forever.
Exactly. And sometimes they talk about their mother's fruitcake recipes.
They don't care what they talk about, long as they just keep talking. They got to keep talking, right?
Yeah, they just keep talking. And Strom Thurmond had, I think, the longest filibuster, over 24 hours. And he had a device attached to his leg so that he could go for 24 hours without having to run to the bathroom.
Oh, wow.
And at any rate, currently, the one thing keeping the Democrats from making D.C. and Puerto Rico states, from packing the courts, from changing the election rules so that cheating is prevalent and Republicans are never elected again, the one thing saving the Second Amendment in virtually all aspects is the fact that those senators can stand up and talk. And the only thing that can shut them up under most circumstances is a 60-vote roll call of the United States Senate. And what Biden is doing and what Chuck Schumer is doing is trying to eliminate that 60-vote threshold by fraud and simply pushing through these incidents to eliminate democracy in America by 50 votes, which is exactly the number of votes the Democrats have. Currently, Manchin of West Virginia and Sinema of Arizona have said they're uncomfortable eliminating the filibuster. And as I said, Senator Schott of Hawaii has now come down with COVID, and if they bring him into the chamber, they may have a lot more problems than they do now.
Oh, wow. Okay, so when you have the 60 votes, that's called cloture, correct?
Yeah, it's called cloture.
So you get 60 votes, you go to cloture, you stop the debating, and you go to vote, but you got to have 60 votes to go to cloture to then go on and vote on the legislation being debated, correct?
So the question is whether you can pass the legislation with the 50 Democrats in the Senate only, or whether you need 60 votes. That would include 10 Republicans in addition to all of the Democrats. And that difference makes all the difference in the world between whether Democrats can switch the institutions of our republic so that they will remain in perpetual control.
So make me sure I understand. You need 60 votes to stop a filibuster.
Yes, 60 votes to stop a filibuster.
60 votes to stop someone from being able to talk and draw it out.
Unless they cheat, and that's what they're trying to do now. They're trying to stop a filibuster by 50 votes.
Now, how long has this 60-vote cloture rule been in the Senate rules?
There's been some way to invoke cloture since 1917. I think it was 1975 that the 67-vote threshold was reduced to 60 votes for most purposes, although you do need two-thirds of those present and voting in order to invoke cloture on a change in the rules.
And when the Republicans were in charge, how many of the Democrats?
A majority, including Kamala Harris, signed a letter in 2017. You remember, at that time, Republicans controlled the House, Republicans controlled the Senate, and Trump was in the White House. And so a majority of the Democrats, including Kamala Harris, signed a letter saying the filibuster is such an important incident of our republic that we will continue to commit to keep it, to protect it, and to keep it in place. This is when the Democrats were in the minority. As soon as they get in the majority, guess what? The shoe's on the other foot. Mm-hmm. They say, we need to eliminate the filibuster, and anyone who doesn't want to eliminate it is like a Bull Connor or George Wallace or Adolf Hitler or a member of the Ku Klux Klan.
And this is basically what Biden went to Georgia and said, was if you don't agree to end cloture and go to a vote on the federalizing of the elections, you're a racist.
Yeah, course, you're this Jefferson is a guy, Davis.
This is a guy, though, who's got a long history of saying racist things.
And arguably, according to some, a long history of being a racist. Mm-hmm. So I guess it takes one to know one. But it certainly, for a guy who got elected to the presidency of the United States on the basis that he's going to unify the country, throwing the most vile accusations at half of America, in addition to all of your political opponents, is certainly not the way to unify America or the way to get the other side on your side with respect to your important objectives.
Yeah.
I mean, he's decided basically to throw that in the wastebasket and rule by vitriol.
Yeah. So I understand that Joe Biden's speech in Georgia the other day, being so nasty and just unhinged, that he did a lot of damage to his presidency, quote presidency, his fake presidency. He did a lot of damage, even with probably some moderates, right?
Yeah, even the number two guy in the Democrat caucus in the Senate, Dick Durbin of Illinois, who's no moderate, he's a crazy leftist, say that Biden did himself a whole lot of damage by just throwing insults at not only everyone who disagrees with him, but half of the country.
So what do you make about the Attorney General, the number two guy at the Department of Justice, now coming out, Olson, and going to create a division to go after domestic terrorists?
Isn't that funny? Who do you think domestic terrorists are? Well, basically, they're conservatives.
Yeah, I was going to say, aren't they people that are concerned about voter fraud, the borders? Aren't they the ones that are concerned about ISIS, Muslim Brotherhood? Aren't they people that defend the Second Amendment? These would all be your domestic terrorists, including, as we saw under the Obama administration with the Department of Homeland Security, documents of potential terrorists was even veterans and those who are pro-life and those interested in Bible prophecy.
Yes, fundamentalist Christians, veterans, people who believe in the Second Amendment. And as a matter of fact, from time to time, these various organizations, including the leftist apparatchiks at the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, have labeled Gun Owners of America, my organization, as extremist, racist, or whatever, notwithstanding the fact that our former executive director was married to a Panamanian. But that seems to be the tool of last resort, which is in the Democrat toolkit. And when they're losing, and I think right now they are losing in a whole variety of ways, they pull out that toolkit and certainly call anyone who disagrees with them a racist.
Before we keep talking here, I want to make sure people have your website address, gunowners.org. Is that right?
Yes.
Gunowners.org, gunowners.org. Can people join your organization?
Yes. For just $25, they can join our organization. They get a whole lot of stuff in addition to having access to our alerts and our summaries of what's happening in Washington.
What about any kind of, you guys have any kind of special project or insurance, whereas if you had to use your gun, then your this insurance from
we have we've tried to work with insurance companies in order to insure people who are standing in their home, some burglar or robber or whatever is downstairs. They go downstairs. The robber shows his gun. You shoot him. You get prosecuted for murder. And that happens a lot. It almost happened to my brother in Kansas City. And we have been trying to work with insurance companies in order to provide insurance and defense, legal defense, for people who are caught in that situation.
You probably didn't hear the news, but tonight we had Mike Lindell on his broadcast from 6 to 7, the Lindell Report, and he broke the news this morning on Steve Bannon's show, and then tonight he got into it more on his show that I co-host with him, and a pretty good-sized bank out of the Midwest, out of Minnesota, I guess out of Iowa as well. They have asked him to close down the bank accounts for 9 different organizations he runs, including a treatment center for addicts, very successful treatment center, by the way. Mm-hmm. But they're apparently this network, Lindell TV and Frank's Speech, was the straw that broke the camel's back. I guess the other 7 organizations having a checking account and bank account there is not a problem, but as soon as we added Lindell TV and frankspeech.com, apparently that is the problem, because we talk about voter fraud and a stolen election, yeah, and everything. So they're asking him to close his accounts and move along, and Mike's saying, no, I'm not going to do it. You can close them. I'm not going to voluntarily close this stuff. I'm not going to be canceled and go along with canceling myself. I'm standing up. I guess my question is, we are seeing this more and more with gun owners, are we not? Or gun shops,
yes,
guys that sell guns, they're being canceled by their bank or their credit card processing companies, correct?
It's not new. During the Obama administration, we had what was called Operation Choke Point. And what it was the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation and the Federal Reserve were trying to push banks not to give loans, not to give credit, not to open bank accounts for what they called high-risk businesses. Now, the high-risk businesses included payroll lenders, but also included gun stores and gun manufacturers. I drafted an amendment during the Obama administration, which passed into law, which says no funds appropriated by law shall be spent on Operation Choke Point. And that was shut down for a little while. Now they're trying to revive that whole concept of using financial institutions to choke off Second Amendment and conservative opposition. And let me say, the solution is fairly easy. If Republicans win control of the House this November, I'll simply draft another letter, another amendment prohibiting any federal funds from being used for this.
Excellent. So let's talk about any bad news. Is there any bad news on the horizon for gun owners for the Second Amendment?
Well, I mean, it's as I say, you don't pop the cork until they bang the gavel. We will always have to be careful so long as Congress is in session and the House and the Senate are in control of the Democrats. We do have, incidentally, some more good news, and that is, as you know, Joe Biden had demanded that BATF promulgate rules prohibiting what are called ghost guns. Now, ghost guns is just government by nomenclature. It's a term made up in the boardroom in New York City by gun control advocates who said that if people are scared of guns and scared of ghosts, then they'll be really scared of something called ghost guns. But what they are is gun kits without serial numbers. They're just gun kits, and the people who buy them and put together these gun kits are some of the safest, most law-abiding people in the world, certainly in the country. And all of a sudden, the Biden administration has heartache because it thinks that if you can put together your own gun, they can't put your gun on their gun registry. They can't come to your house in the middle of the night, and they can't control you. So the Biden administration had proposed to promulgate regulations banning these gun kits. Apparently, they have run into, as a result of a Freedom of Information request from Gun Owners of America, in addition to other things, they've run into problems. Under the Administrative Procedures Act, they're going to have to enumerate how many people are affected. And they have no idea, and they now admit they have no idea, of how many of these kits are out there. So they're now had to put their regulation on hold because they don't know what they're doing.
Wow. Wow. Okay, let me ask you, let's say someone goes out now and buys an AR-15. Do they have to worry that somewhere along the way the liberals are going to make it illegal to own an AR-15? Will they have to surrender that AR-15? Would they be grandfathered in? Or will there be so many Americans that tell the federal government to go pound sand?
I'm not sure that I can make a firm prediction. There are states that ban AR-15s.
Which states? Do you know which states ban them?
California.
Of course.
Of course. And Mara Healey, the Attorney General of Massachusetts, who's now apparently going to run for governor of that state, has banned them by regulatory fiat. So there's an open question of whether she can do that or not, but she just waved her witchy wand and said these are illegal, and so arguably they are in Massachusetts. Now, some of the legislation which has been introduced purports not to grandfather them, to basically require that you destroy your AR-15. Other bills that have been introduced allow you to keep your gun, graciously keep your gun, so long as you put it on a registry. We know from California that when they have registries of guns they don't like AR-15s, the next step is that knock on the door for officials announcing the guns have now been banned and we're here to collect them.
And what do you think if they were to do that in America? How many Americans do you think are going to go along?
Well, the important thing is to make sure those Americans' names are not on Biden's gun list. So long as he's now put together a gun registry in violation of law, I can say in violation of law because I drafted the law that he's violating. He's now put together a registry, which by some estimates is over 54 million gun owners.
So how did he do that? So if you went out and bought a gun tomorrow,
a lot of things. He doesn't. He apparently. Well, first of all, there's the out of business records. When a gun dealer goes out of business, they turn over these boxes to the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. Now, the law that I drafted prohibits the government from putting these into a registry, but apparently that's exactly what it is trying to do. In addition, people who are subject to these background checks, the FBI is apparently not destroying those records instantaneously as it is required by the Smith Amendment, which I also drafted, to do. So they are illegally compiling this list. So long as they have the capacity to come to your house, that's a problem. If they don't know who you are, and they certainly don't for people who make their own guns, then at that point you can expect a very broad amount of peaceful resistance.
So what is the only reason progressives, liberals, Marxists want to get rid of the Second Amendment and gun rights, gun owners in America? What is their ultimate objective in doing that?
Well, their ultimate objective is to eliminate civilian ownership of guns.
Yes, but why? What is it they want to accomplish by doing that?
Part of it is that they don't want to punish criminals. All of this comes at the same time as they have bail reform, prison reform, and are turning large numbers of people out on the streets. Now, in Virginia, with former Governor Terry McAuliffe, now thankfully defeated for reelection, he ensured that all of these prisoners who were newly released from prison were registered to vote under the assumption that they would be Democratic voters. So rather than punish people who might vote for them, they would prefer to eliminate firearms and use that as their placebo, because that's a, quote, solution to violent crime, which doesn't they don't think affects them electorally.
But doesn't it also come down to the fact they want to do things to the American people that they know they can't do as Marxist revolutionaries if the people are armed? Doesn't it come down to the fact that anytime someone tries to disarm a peaceful population, they have ruthless, tyrannical, torturous, brutal plans?
You'd like to think that, although there are parts of this country where they have functionally eliminated people's Second Amendment rights, and people in those parts have not risen up against those usurpations. I'm thinking of New York City as one example, but California certainly is another. So certainly at its core, the Second Amendment was envisioned by the forefathers, not because guns can be used to shoot deer, but because guns can be used ultimately as a tool to resist fascism or resist totalitarianism.
And if you resist totalitarianism, that now today makes you a domestic terrorist, right?
Yeah, I've been to places of the world. I went into Warsaw to basically overthrow the Polish government, communist government. And during the Second World War, there was a ghetto uprising in Warsaw. And the Jews who were involved in the ghetto uprising, I mean, the first thing they saw is that the Nazis had banned guns. So the Nazis had all the guns, and the resistors had no guns. And as a result, the carnage was so extraordinary that to this day, if you go into the center of Warsaw on a train, it looks like you're still in the suburbs because all the old city was just completely demolished.
Gunowners.org, gunowners.org. You guys are fighting for our Second Amendment, our liberties to keep and maintain our guns in order to be a free society. Gunowners.org. Appreciate all you do. You've been doing this a long time, Mike, and we love having you on here as a guest, but we just appreciate all you're doing.
Thank you so much, Brian.
Gunowners.org, folks. Hope you check it out. Mike Hammond checking in.